You're listening to the Full and Thriving Podcast, a place where courageous women come to break free from food obsession, heal their relationship with their body, and strive to live a life that's present, lighthearted, and meaningful. If you're listening, my wish is that this podcast serves as a catalyst that inspires you to nourish your body, nurture your mind, and energize your spirit. I'm your host, Meg McCabe, a certified life coach and eating disorder recovery coach with a PhD in having a good time. Just kidding about that last part. Anyway, thank you so much for listening and enjoy the show. Today's guest is Natalie Rose. Natalie is a psychotherapist and passionate advocate for mental and physical health. After battling a vicious cycle of dieting and binge eating for a decade, Natalie discovered how to achieve a healthier relationship with food and herself through psychotherapy and her psychology degrees. As a psychotherapist, she now helps her clients unlock the experiences that have led to disordered eating behaviors, and she helps foster lifelong skills to enhance her clients' sense of food freedom and overall well-being. In this episode, we discuss her experience with body dysmorphia and dive into what it really means when someone says they feel fat. Natalie is a fabulous guest and therapist, and I know you will enjoy this episode of the show. Hey, Natalie, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing so well. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. Where are you located right now?
I'm in Toronto, or actually just outside of Toronto.
Okay. And what's life like for you over there? How's it going?
Well, apparently today is the first day of spring, but it still feels like winter, like there's snow everywhere, but it's really sunny and I'm excited to maybe go buy some like tulips or something.
Oh, I love that. Keep them in the house and just remind yourself that spring is finally here.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I need to buy myself some flowers. It's always something I love to do. I'll go to Trader Joe's. I don't know if you guys have Trader Joe's, but they have great flowers.
No, we don't. We're so jealous of Trader Joe's over here because we see it all over Instagram. So you're in the States then?
Yes, I'm in Connecticut area. And so I think Trader Joe's is super fun and they always have a pretty bouquet section that you can look for flowers. But yes, I'm so glad you're embracing spring and hopefully your snow melts soon so you can really feel like you're in it with the rest of us.
Yeah, hopefully.
Oh my gosh. Well, again, I'm so happy to have you on the show. And today we've decided to talk about body dysmorphia, which is something so many listeners struggle with here. But before we dive into that, I'd love to hear about your background with chronic dieting and disordered eating. So please feel free to start from wherever you feel is appropriate, because I want to really get a sense of how you arrived to where you are today.
Okay, I'll try to condense my story. I think it all started when I was around 13 or 14. I just sort of decided that I didn't like the way that my body looked. And actually, it started before that. I remember being as young as like 6 or 7 years old and complaining to my mom about how I hated my legs. I didn't like my arms. I was comparing my body to my friend's body who was more slender. And I was pretty slender myself, but I remember having heard comments from relatives about saying how I was pudgy, like I must be taking after my Italian roots because I was pudgy, whereas the British side of my family, they took so much pride in being thin and there was so much diet culture on that side of the family, which is where the side where that relative was from. And that just started changing my perception about my body. Like I really became focused on body fat and shape. And fast forwarding to when I was a teen, you know, you're going through puberty. My body was changing. It was changing so fast. And I remember going on this trip to Italy where we enjoyed so much amazing food. Like my family there was just so warm and welcoming and they cooked us everything from scratch. Like they raised their own animals and prepared everything from scratch. And they were so excited to host us. So we ate a lot in that period of time. And I probably gained some weight on that trip. And I came back from that trip and I was going to a new school and I was in high school. So there's so much pressure to appear a certain way, especially when meeting new people and being thrown into an environment where I didn't really have much safety in that respect. So I just like basically decided to stop eating pretty much. I ate very small amounts. I lost weight quick and I lost a lot of weight. And not to the point where anyone would be able to see that anything was wrong, because there's so many misconceptions about disordered eating. Like if you lose weight, it's just praised. It's a good thing. But, you know, deep down, I was really struggling. And that didn't last for long because my body's protective survival mechanism kicked in and I started overeating to compensate. So started this pattern of restricting and then binge eating, restricting and binge eating. And no one knew. So I was kind of just sort of dealing with, I don't even know what I was thinking. I guess that was sort of became my new norm. Like some days you do good and other days you've already fallen off the wagon. So you might as well eat everything and then just start again fresh the next day. So I had carried that pattern through the rest of high school pretty much. And then university, I started having complications from a heart problem. So my heart problem was actually genetic. I was born with it. But because I was drinking a lot of alcohol in university, it was starting to affect my heart. So I was told to stop exercising and to stop drinking alcohol. And those were two things that I really relied on a lot. So I relied on alcohol to mask my social anxiety. And so I could socialize at parties. And that was just sort of how I knew to party, I guess, or to socialize. And that's what everyone was doing. And then I exercised as a way to maintain my body weight. So getting rid of those two things, I felt really, really lost and really anxious, really uncomfortable in my body. And so I started isolating myself. And then the binge eating increased. So I was isolating and binge eating because I was just so hopeless. Like, you know, as a young adult, I was still a teenager at that time. Everything I knew was just kind of like the rug was ripped underneath my feet. And so towards the end of university, I got really involved in my thesis project, and that gave me a lot of confidence because I was like running this experiment. I was analyzing the brains of birds, kind of sad that it's like animal research, but it was really, really cool research, like using that technology and neuroscience and stuff. So as I was building my confidence and staying active and busy with that, the binge eating decreased because I wasn't isolating and basically eating to cope with my feelings anymore. I was feeling good. I was active. I was getting out there and I was working on this thing. So my eating patterns actually like settled, normalized. And I wasn't doing like strict dieting either. I was sort of trying to eat more balanced meals. And then I graduated university and then my mom got diagnosed with cancer. So that was really stressful. And so the wellness piece kind of entered the chat at this point because my mom was receiving the regular treatment, medical chemotherapy, but she was also seeing a naturopath who started prescribing all these natural forms and cutting out sugar and cutting out all these things, right? So I hopped on that diet as a way to support her, but also psychologically, probably to feel some kind of control and to have something to focus on and manage. So I was cutting out all these things. I lost weight really quickly again. And then the binge eating got triggered again by that, just like the restriction and all the stress I was going through and never processing my feelings at all, just because that's like not something we did in my family. Like we didn't talk about feelings. So my weight started fluctuating all over the place there. My eating patterns were chaotic. And then over the next few years, I tried different diets. So this is when I was like really trying like the Atkins diet, you know, when it's like just protein and veggies or sugar-free, or I think I tried keto. Like I've tried everything and my weight just kept going up and down. My mood, like my body image was terrible. And I think I just got to a point where I realized that fad diets, like the strict diet, just wasn't working anymore. Like it was not working. It was causing more harm than good. So I vowed to stop dieting and just to work on eating more balanced meals. And I also started going to therapy, where I was introduced to the world of my own emotions and just understanding what they are and what they meant and processing how to feel. And I noticed that my binge eating stopped. I no longer felt the need to cope in that way. And then after that, it was kind of starting to tease out, I would say, over the past few years, just moving away from wellness, that wellness culture. I think the tail end of my disordered eating story was like, okay, I'm not dieting anymore. I'm not binge eating anymore, but now I'm just going to only eat healthy foods. So then the last part of my story was just sort of really figuring out, what does healthy actually mean to me? And what is real health versus what wellness culture tells you is healthy? So I just slowly started reintroducing foods that I used to think were bad, slowly and surely. And I'm really happy to say that I have a really balanced relationship with food now and with my emotions. And, you know, body image is kind of like, I feel like at the end of that, when you sort of balance your eating patterns, then you kind of get to this place where it's like, okay, what's my relationship with my body like now, or and how do I want it to be? And so I worked through that as well towards the end of it. And here I am.
Wow. I love how your journey is such a natural progression, right? It was like a natural figuring out of, okay, like these diets aren't working. How do I process and feel my emotions? Like, what is that like? And then recognizing that that really helped with healing the binge eating. And then calling yourself out on saying, like, you know what, I'm still kind of stuck on this healthified eating, and being able to use that to be like the final push towards food freedom. So I loved hearing your story. Thank you for sharing all of that. How would you say your mindset around food and body has transformed, like from the very beginning to now? Like, how do you view food and body differently?
I think I would say it's a lot more balanced. Like, when you're in this place of fear, I remember feeling so much urgency. Like, I needed to change my body now. It needed to happen quickly. Otherwise, I couldn't feel okay. Like, it felt sort of life and death before. And in a sense, it really was, because we're such social creatures. And especially throughout the period of adolescence, we're really wired to focus on how we can belong in social settings. You know, what I had been exposed to, the messages I had heard through diet culture, through just all around. I mean, we're really all given the message that if you look good, then you'll be accepted, and looking good equals being thin and toned. So sort of all of that contributed to this really fearful mindset that I needed to look a certain way. I needed to look flawless so I could be protected from rejection or hurt. And it also ties into past experiences too, just feeling, you know, rejected in certain friendships or having falling outs, like things like that kind of played into my attachment, my relationship with food and body, because I felt like if only I could perfect those things, then I'll be accepted and things will be okay. And then I think part of my journey was really building solid friendships too. I think the more I felt connected socially to my real friends, which is like not a whole lot of friends, just a few solid friends that I'm really close with, that gave me more peace as well. Like, okay, I've found my people. I can feel safe now. I think, you know, on a subconscious level, that's what I'm thinking helped, because then there was less of this fear of being judged or rejected. I had that sort of support network. And then the other piece of it was also neutralizing some of the fearful beliefs I had around food, because how I view food back then is not the way that I view it now. I always talk about confirmation bias, where once you get a certain message in your mind, a certain belief, like for example, that gluten is bad, and then your brain attends to more information that supports that belief. So I went through this whole phase of really only believing those certain messages and seeing that information on social media and just being really tunnel vision in like these beliefs around food. So some really helpful accounts on social media actually helped me challenge those myths and beliefs. And that was part of healing my relationship with food too, was like, you know, actually gluten is not bad. Like, there's so much complexity to it. It's people with celiac disease are allergic to gluten. You could have an intolerance or sensitivity to gluten, but let me just try it out. And sure enough, I reintroduced gluten back into my diet and didn't have these like effects that I had before. So a lot of challenging those old beliefs helped me develop a more realistic relationship with food.
Yeah, interesting. So when you really believed that gluten was bad for you, you started noticing through confirmation bias all these symptoms in your body, like, oh, I feel discomfort in my stomach and bloating, and this must be because of the gluten that I ate, right? So you went from that to acknowledging maybe this is not true. I'm open to trying again. And when you were open to trying again and changing that belief, you actually didn't experience or see those symptoms flare up.
Exactly. And a lot of those symptoms really manifest from overall restriction, which I didn't know at the time. You know, you just think you're fed the message that if you eat less and move more, like you'll get healthier or you'll be thin. But it actually really does a lot of harm because that's actually not what we want to do. We want to be fueling our bodies, eating enough, and moving joyfully. So I didn't realize that the bloating, all this digestive discomfort that I was experiencing was related to dieting, not eating enough, and also having so much stress and fear around food, because those are symptoms of anxiety.
Yes. I wish I could just shout that from the mountaintops, because I know how when you're experiencing GI symptoms, how like distressful it could be, and you just want to solve the problem quickly. And sometimes the real answer is, it's not the food, it's the dieting that's been the problem. And it takes a long time to learn that. So I'm glad you were able to apply that to your life and trust that information, which must have been really hard.
I think it's just a timely process. It happens gradually over time. I think that's like, you know, one of the hardest parts about this whole thing is like, you know, we want to fix the discomfort. Like we want to see things, like see results. We don't want to feel this discomfort anymore, but it really just takes a lot of time because your body has to adjust too. You know, your gut has to rebuild the enzymes to digest all the foods that you've been restricting. Because when you restrict them, your body kind of like forgets how to digest them almost.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the big transformation for you, a lot of it was like going from a sense of urgency to a sense of perspective. Like things take time, recognizing you can't have that quick fix.
Exactly. Because the dieting mindset is all about the quick fix. Mm-hmm. You diet and you do see these results really quickly. And so you get accustomed to that and you feel like, okay, what I'm doing is right. But then obviously there's all those consequences. So I remember one really big shift that I had was, I vowed to not start a new diet on the Monday. Like no matter how bad I felt like I ate over the weekend, I'm not going to cut anything out on the Monday. I'm just going to eat balanced meals, move my body in like a gentle way and just wait because my body knows what to do. Like it'll figure itself out. Even if I don't start feeling good right away, it's going to happen. And that was a huge shift that I can like specifically remember making. A lot of the other things were kind of gradual and not so obvious or intentional, I should say.
Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful, helpful reminder is you can commit to eating more balanced, nourishing your body enough, but it might not be that quick fix, right? Right away. Like the next step is to wait and allow that commitment to make gradual change. Yeah. That's really, really good. I think it's so hard for listeners to like pause and let things unfold sometimes. Like I can just tell that those comments are going to be really helpful. So with your story, which is very interesting, how you were really navigating with as much trust as you could or authenticity as you could, even though it was hard, like you kept listening to yourself, which I really admire. How did body dysmorphia fit into your experience?
One thing I remember that was really surprising to me was the way that my perception of my body shifted when I was actually fueling myself properly. So there was a period of time after like the fad diets and the binge eating. I talked about that period of time where I was more into like the healthified eating kind of thing. So the wellness end of it where I was not dieting, but I was only eating healthy foods kind of thing. And my body weight was below where my natural weight wants to lie. And I felt good in that body, but it never really felt like it was truly me. I always felt like I was an imposter because it was the lowest I'd ever been in my life. And it wasn't me. It was everything I strove for. I thought it was good. good to be lean kind of thing. But I remember also having a lot of anxiety, like if I overate or something, like having anxiety, being more attuned to potential changes, and also, you know, not feeling great about my body all the time, like being more critical of it. So I learned that at my lowest weight, like it didn't mean that I was happy. It didn't mean that I was free from body image problems. I still had a negative body image. I still worried about it a lot. And I also still experienced like all the other things in life and relationships that you think are going to go away once you get the perfect body. Anyways, so as I started reintroducing foods that I had been restricting and my body weight sort of normalized back to its normal, where I've been throughout my life pre-dieting, like where it feels good at. I remember looking back at photos when I was thinner and it was almost like, I don't know how to describe it. It was like I could see myself more clearly now in the body that I had, in my own body. I could see it clearly. Whereas when I was in my lower weight, I wasn't actually seeing that when I looked in the mirror. I was seeing a higher weight. And, you know, we see this in eating disorders all the time where your perception of your body is distorted when you're below the weight that your body wants to be at, like below your healthy weight. So I could see myself more clearly now. And there were a lot of emotions that came with that because, you know, I'd worked so hard to be in the lower weight. You're told that you're successful once you finally reach that weight. And so there's all these feelings of failure, feelings like I knew I'd never get back to that place because I knew I would never go back to disordered eating or dieting. So there's grief, like you're sort of shifting into this new body, even though it's like your healthy body. And from there, I just sort of developed a different relationship with my body. I realized that I didn't want to depend on feeling my thinnest or leanest to feel successful or to be happy. I realized that being at my lowest weight didn't bring me all the happiness in the world anyways. And I just wanted to be able to live my life without focusing so much on my body. And that's how I would say the body image and the body dysmorphia improved, is by the less attention you pay to something, the less fear you have. Like if you're constantly trying to control something that is uncontrollable, the more attached you feel to that and the more fear and anxiety you have. So by purposely putting my attention towards other important things in my life, I sort of created that balance with my relationship with my body too.
That's amazing. So you really felt and experienced that body dysmorphia when you were out of it. Like you saw like, wow, I was at my thinnest and I was perceiving my body completely inaccurately. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so as a clinician, like, do you see your own clients experiencing this? And how does that really look and sound to someone you might see?
Definitely. There's a lot of grief and anxiety and sadness when clients are noticing their bodies changing, as even if they didn't like their body when it was at their thinnest, so much energy and time goes into getting it to that place. Like you change your food, you change your eating habits, like you put out a set of actions and then it comes up with results and you feel successful, even if you don't like the way that you look. So I think that there's a lot of mourning that all the time that goes into that. And then just like, because like we've spent so much time trying to change our bodies, we also have this false perception that other people are looking at us the same way that we're looking at ourselves. So there's the fear of judgment coming in too. People are going to notice that I gained weight and what are they going to think? And they're going to comment on it. Like I just can't handle someone commenting on it because you're working so hard to not think about your body so much. And then if someone makes a comment, it just takes you right back to that place that, oh, like my body is the most important thing about me. So it's really tough. You know, we talk a lot about setting boundaries with people around them making body comments or the way that they're talking about body and weight and food and dieting and stuff like that. But another piece of it is just processing the emotions that come up when we are triggered in that way, whether it's seeing a photo of yourself where you noticeably gained weight or seeing a difference in the mirror. We talk about ways to process.
Okay. That makes sense. With the expression, and I've seen you make a few posts about this online, so I'd love to hear you kind of break that down for us. But that thought, I feel fat, like tell me what you think about that and what's beneath that.
I think the I feel fat is so complex. Mm-hmm. And yet so many people relate to it because you can experience that or feel yourself saying that or feeling that, even if, you know, you haven't had an eating disorder, disordered eating. It's partly the message, the negative messages that we get about fatness, where feeling fat becomes like a euphemism for all these negative emotions. Like if we're feeling bloated, or if we're feeling ashamed of our body, or we're feeling our clothes are fitting too tightly, or sometimes that feeling of fatness can just suddenly happen after eating something that we feel stressed about, that we think is going to make us gain weight. So it sort of translate into physical feelings of like getting larger. You know, it involves perceptual stuff happening. Like a lot of people with eating disorders and disordered eating actually have sensory sensitivities. Like they have perceptual differences where they're actually experiencing the feeling of food in their stomach differently than the average person. So eating something can cause them to feel instantly like they're getting bigger. And then likewise for the way that they're perceiving themselves in the mirror. You know, research has shown that those who score highly on perfectionism tend to pay, their brain attends more to detail. So when compared to control subjects who didn't score highly on perfectionism, they're both looking at the same image, and the perfectionists noticed a lot more fine details that the others didn't. So it's sort of like they're actually looking in the mirror and seeing these differences in shape and size. But yeah, I think a huge part that I talk about often on Instagram is the shame that is associated with fatness. So if someone is feeling fat, like maybe they're trying on jeans that are too tight, or they haven't moved their body in a while, maybe they're feeling lethargic, they may feel shame about those things, and also fear about gaining weight, and then, you know, what kind of perceptions are tied to that and the meaning tied to that. So it becomes like a really distressing experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you're saying is it's usually so much more about the emotions, not so much actually gaining weight.
Yeah. I mean, we can't physically gain weight in like a matter of moments, which is like how intense this feeling comes on. You know, our body doesn't even really change that much day to day, but we can feel fat one day and then not feel it the next day. So there's so much going on. There's also hormones. Like, you know, our body weight doesn't change that fast, but our hormones and our moods shift. So that's sort of a sign, like, you know, when people don't believe me when I say like, you know, you can't gain weight that quickly, they believe me when they realize like, oh yeah, okay, my mood did change from that day to the next day. And, you know, I have been feeling really stressed and I was feeling down on myself. So yeah, there's definitely that connection with mood.
Yeah, that's a really helpful reminder. I saw a post you made about that, which was like, my body doesn't change that fast, but my mood does. And it's kind of a little bit of an aha, recognizing, okay, like maybe it's not about my body change. Maybe it's about how I'm feeling today.
Exactly.
It's profound and simple, but that is exactly how it works on like a psychological level.
Yeah. And it helps to actually put words to the feelings you are having. Like instead of I feel fat, you know, there's a difference between saying, I feel like I might be gaining weight and I'm worried whether my partner is still going to be attracted to me, right? Like there's a whole web of emotions and experiences that are hiding behind that I feel fat. Mm-hmm. So when you actually get to the root of what's happening inside of you, you have greater access to those emotions, like to processing them and to even getting what you need, you know? So in that example, like if you're feeling insecure about your body and in your relationship, that might pave the way for a conversation with your partner and a chance to connect on a deeper level and get some reassurance in that sense.
I love that thought of being able to just more accurately describe what you're experiencing. So being able to say, instead of I feel fat, saying I'm worried that what I just ate is going to cause weight gain. And that makes me afraid that my partner is going to treat me differently or not love me. And I think that brings more context into the situation and doesn't put so much blame on your body.
Exactly. And even just labeling our emotions that way, like I'm feeling sadness or I'm feeling fear, it helps reduce the intensity of our emotions too. because it actually activates the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain that's responsible for logic and reasoning. Whereas before that, if we're just kind of stuck in a feeling before we label it, the amygdala is activated, which is the emotional part of our brain. So we're more likely to stay upset and distressed for longer periods of time, unless we sort of put words to our feelings and be able to start processing them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So putting words help us process faster. Mm-hmm. What you're saying. Yeah. So I'm also thinking about this expression, I feel fat. And like, I know we're two women in straight sized bodies, you know, having that experience. And I know you can't speak for folks in larger sized bodies, but what are your thoughts as far as like, isn't that kind of like that expression hurtful to people who are actually living in larger bodies?
Oh my God, absolutely. It inadvertently perpetuates fat phobia and weight stigma. Because nobody says, I feel fat in a positive way. They're saying it in a fearful, negative, shameful way. So you're reinforcing this idea for yourself and for others that fatness is bad, which is just not true. You know, a more helpful thing to say is, I feel uncomfortable in my body. And, you know, I hate the way that I've been taught that that's bad, that fatness is bad. So you're sort of like separating yourself from that. You're realizing where that message comes from and how it's distorting your current experience. And if we can actually label what we're feeling and stop using the phrase, I feel fat, hopefully we can stop perpetuating that fat phobia and the weight stigma surrounding that statement.
Yeah, because it just feels like it connects so much negativity to having a fat body, which we're all trying to neutralize, at least in this space. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes so charged when we're saying, I feel fat. And so I challenge all the listeners today to stop using that expression, right? It's not a useful expression. It's actually harming other people. And it's also perpetuating eating disorders. And it's not even accurate because usually there's so much more underneath. So I hope that people listening can challenge themselves this week to like notice when they say that and maybe do what Natalie is suggesting, which is get a little deeper into exactly what you're experiencing. So thank you for commenting on that. So now I'm thinking of other folks, the listeners who are living in straight size bodies and saying they feel fat. When it comes to body dysmorphia, is it possible that someone can actually truly believe that they are fat when they're actually not fat?
Yeah, definitely. And that's linked to more of the perceptual differences. Mm-hmm. So I know that something that has helped me in those situations is just acknowledging that I can't trust my perception of my body right now. And so I'm not going to engage with those thoughts. And I'm going to do what I can to soothe my emotions and the way I'm feeling and redirect my focus on something else that I know is true. Mm. Really just acknowledging that it's like a distorted perception that I'm experiencing and having so much compassion for that. Like it sucks that I'm feeling so badly about my body. It sucks that this is what happens when I'm looking in the mirror. I'm having this negative experience and distorted perception. And, you know, I'm sorry that I have to go through that. It doesn't make sense to me or to anyone else. And what's the best way that I can self-soothe right now without feeding into that perception?
Mm-hmm. I think the word of the day for me, it keeps coming up, is acknowledgement. Like having the courage to acknowledge those things that might lead to healing, right? Like acknowledging, okay, like my experience, my perception is distorted and I'm okay with admitting that. I don't know how I'm going to heal this, but I'm okay with admitting and acknowledging that I'm experiencing a distortion.
Yeah, it's kind of really in line with acceptance in general. Like we can't change something if we can't accept it first. And just by accepting that this is the experience we're going through, it can lead to positive change. And absolutely, maybe not ever get rid of that perception. You know, some people continue to have negative thoughts about their body from time to time. You know, bad body image days are normal. We don't feel great about our bodies all the time, even if we have the best relationship with our body. It's more so accepting that that's what I'm thinking and feeling right now And how can I do something or choose an action that's going to help me feel better versus worse? Mm-hmm. Because when you're stuck in the pattern of disordered eating or an eating disorder, that's not what happens. What happens is you get triggered, you're experiencing that bad body image and all these negative perceptions. And then usually that leads to an eating disorder behavior or restriction or a new diet or something like that. So we want to accept what we're feeling and choose the opposite, basically.
Mm-hmm. That's really great advice. And what do you like to do? Like if you're having a bad body image day and you want to get yourself feeling better, like have that shift out of the negative body image, what are some things you like to do to just change your state?
I like to put on some comfy clothes. I will eat regularly. I might eat my favorite foods or just make sure that I'm still nourishing my body and I'm not restricting in any way. And I always prioritize connection because I know for me, that was a huge part of my healing experience is just feeling connected to people. So that might mean like chatting with a friend or watching a movie with my partner or cuddling my cat or writing, like something that connects me to me inside my body and helps me feel like myself.
I love that. I love connection. I'm a big fan. So I love that that's what your go-to almost like coping skill is. It's like, I'm going to reach out. I'm going to find connection to improve my body image today. It's a really lovely choice. But anyway, Natalie, this has been such a pleasure having you on the show. I was wondering if you could just share how listeners can find you.
Absolutely. So my social media on Instagram and TikTok is Wake Up and Smell the Rosé. And my website is wakeupandsmelltherosé.com.
So fun. I love the name of your brand, by the way. I think it's really cute. And it gets to that there's so much more to life, right? That's what I think of when I hear your brand. So, all right. Well, thanks again, Natalie. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you so much for having me. You too.
Okay.